Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the How to Apply for Jobs in the Federal Government conference call. Your host for today is Ms. Dolores Garcia. Ms. Garcia, you may begin.
Good evening, everyone. Let's take care of some issues regarding the technical part of this portion. You are either supposed to be on the webinar or on the phone, not both. So if you're on the phone as well, you need to hang up, okay? For those of you on the phone, there was a presentation that was sent. Please use the second presentation. Hopefully, this answers all of your questions. My name is Dolores Garcia, and I'm the Regional Recruitment Coordinator for the United States Department of Labor for the Boston and New York regions. And I am your speaker for this evening's program. Joining me as host for this evening's program are Barbara McKeon, Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter, and Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C. I thank them for inviting me. Since we are doing this program both as a webinar and a teleconference for those without computers, Barbara and Steve will have limited ability to communicate with everyone. So I have been asked to welcome everyone and thank the Manhattan Society for their sponsorship of the New York City Southern New York Chapter's participation in tonight's program. So thank you. Tonight's program, How to Effectively Apply for Jobs in the Federal Government, is the first in a series of six programs as part of the National MS Society 2011 Employment Teleconference Series. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series, and you can contact your chapter if you're interested in obtaining a copy. After I have completed my presentation, there will be time for your questions both online and by phone. If you have questions, please feel free to jot them down during the call so you're prepared to ask them during our question and answer period. For those on the webinar, please raise your virtual hand at the end of the presentation. And for those on the phone, be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line after your question is asked. This will allow us to get as many questions as possible in. We will do our best to get all the questions, but if time runs out, you already have my contact information. It's on the phone, so you can email me, or rather on the screen, you can email me with your questions, and I will do my best to respond. My contact info is as follows. My name is Dolores Garcia, and it's spelled like the Latin word for pain or sorrow. So any of you who took Latin, it's Dolores, D-O-L-O-R-E-S Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A. My email address is Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A, dot Dolores, D-O-L-O-R-E-S, at DOL.gov. Send me an email with your questions, and I will try to get back to you as soon as possible. Please do not send me emails with your resumes attached for review, because I will not be rating and ranking them. I will not be able to give you tips, okay? Now, there were two PowerPoints sent out, and I plan to use the second one. If for some reason you did not receive the second one, please follow along as best you can. You can request the modified version from your chapter. As I said before, at the conclusion of tonight's call, we will not only be taking questions, but we will also be sending an email link to a survey in an effort to evaluate this program. This is a short survey, and we would greatly appreciate it if you would take a few moments to respond, as we are greatly interested in your feedback. The topic for this evening's program is very timely. Some of you may or may not be aware, but in July 2010, President Obama signed an executive order to establish the federal government as a model employer of individuals with disabilities. executive departments and agencies have been tasked with improving their effort to employ workers with disabilities through increased recruitment, hiring, and retention of individuals with disabilities, and there is a commitment on the part of the current administration to increase the number of individuals with disabilities in the federal workforce by adding 100,000 disabled employees over the next 5 years. For job seekers with disabilities, this means competitive opportunities available throughout the Office of Personnel Management Schedule A Placement Authority, which we will be talking about in tonight's program. Working for the federal government has an array of excellent benefits, including flexible work schedules, telework, child care, and elder care resources, which may be of particular interest to tonight's audience. As I mentioned earlier, I will be your speaker for tonight's program. Well, if you ever apply for a job with the U.S. Department of Labor in the New York region, there's a chance that I might have been the specialist rating and ranking your application. Several years ago, because I got tired of checking incomplete, not qualified, I made it a personal commitment to teach people how to compete effectively for a federal job. I created PowerPoints on the common mistakes applicants make and began to take what I called my show on the road, going to job fairs, colleges, universities. And tonight, I am proud to say, is my first very, very large webinar. So, let's begin. I am now going to move you to the first slide of our presentation, which is how to effectively apply for federal jobs. And now we are going to go to the next slide. The agenda for tonight will be the application process, the job search, building of a federal resume, resume tips, and then that will be followed by questions and answers. I'm going to be flying through this stuff pretty quickly, so again, remember that this will be available upon request from your chapter. One of the ways you, when you look at a federal job announcement, one of the things you will always see is GS- a four-digit number dash then a grade. Now, everybody always wants to know what the GS is. Well, the GS is the way a job is paid. There are other ways jobs are paid, through pay banding. If you have a blue-collar job, it might be YV, YW. But for GS is the way many series for jobs are paid. Now, what I want you to be aware of is the pay scales. So an entry-level position at a GS-5 in New York City would pay $35,309. However, an entry-level position at a GS-5 in San Francisco would be at $37,073. So it's important to remember that just because you saw a job advertised in San Francisco at a GS-5 at $37,073, if I'm interested in working in Atlanta, I should read the vacancy announcement, and that will tell me that a GS-5 Step 1 is $32,722. Now, one of the things I also want to remind you of is that when you look at a job, one of the things you want to look at is promotion potential. Because imagine if I accept a job in New York City at a GS-5 and there is absolutely no promotion potential. However, if I accept a GS-5 with promotion potential to a GS-12, what that means is a year after I've started earning $35,309, if I'm ready to assume the next level of responsibility, I will then be promoted to a GS-7, which is 4378. A year after that, if I am eligible to assume the next level of responsibility, I will earn $53,500. A year after that, I will earn, as a GS-11, $64,729, and then as a year after that, I will be at the journeyman level, which is $77,585. Now, if I decided never to assume any supervisory or duties or a promotion, what will happen is that even if I stayed in a GS-12, I am entitled to what they call an within-grade increase. And those within-grade increases, this year a 12-10 is $100,859. So it's important for you, even though you're interested in getting a job, it's very important for you to see what the promotion potential is on a particular job that you're interested in, because if not, if I accept a job in New York City that only goes to a 5, that means if I'm interested in a 6 or above, I am going to have to compete for it. I am going to have to earn that grade. Now, procedures vary across federal agencies. I have worked at the United States Department of Labor, but I will tell you that every vacancy announcement in every agency has to have certain information. So in order to ensure that your application is complete, the best tip that anyone can ever give an applicant is they need to read the vacancy announcement from top to bottom. Now, as someone who has competed for a federal job, I know that it's terrific looking at that vacancy announcement. But I will also tell you that within the last couple of months, changes have started to occur in the hiring process. Number one, those of you who ever applied for a federal job before probably are very familiar with KSAs, Knowledge, Skills, and Abilities. What would happen is that if you were interested in a job, you might have to fill out 7, 10, 15, 20 long narrative questions. You would have to answer them in narratives. Now what has happened is that there are no longer narratives at the first stage. What happens now is that you apply for the job in the location that you are interested in, and then what will happen is that there will be anywhere from 15 to 40 competency questions. They will all be multiple choice, multiple answer, true, false. But there are certain things that you need to remember. Number one, well, let's go back to what we're looking for on the vacancy announcement. So, number one, who may apply? Most of you are going to look at the radio buttons in USA Jobs, and there are two. Those positions open to the public only. However, if you are on this teleconference, you should know that you may well be eligible for something that is called an appointment under Schedule A, and that is for someone who has a disability. Now, when you go into USA Jobs, and we will go into this live so you can see an actual job that is out there after this PowerPoint presentation, you will see that you will have two choices when you go to browse your jobs. You can browse for the public jobs open to the public only, or for all jobs. Now, I would suggest you look for all jobs, the reason being the following. Jobs are announced two ways, or can be announced two ways. Those open to the public, and those open to current, former, and permanent federal employees open with reinstatement of eligibility. Now, usually those vacancies, the ones that are open to the public, are going to be a huge pool because everyone can apply if you are a citizen. For the other pool, which is those open to current and former federal permanent employees with reinstatement of eligibility, it's going to be a pool that is a lot smaller. However, most people don't read the entire statement because very many times it says, and those eligible under special hiring authorities. And guess what? Schedule A is a special hiring authority. So that means you just gave yourself two shots at a job. You can apply in the big pool, and you can apply in the former pool, in the smaller pool. Now, what you have to remember is you need the documentation. You need the documentation that, yes, you have a disability. And there is a format that you can follow, or you can get it from your Voc Rehab office. And on top of it, you need a job certification readiness letter that basically is one line that is attached to the statement of disability, and it says that you can perform the job. If you don't have that certification of job readiness, some agencies will not be able to put you on a permanent appointment, and what will happen is that they will have to put you on a temporary appointment to see if you could successfully fill the job. Now, we talked about you need to look if it's permanent, if there's a not to exceed date. Now, just because you may get health benefits and get retirement benefits out of the job does not mean that it is permanent. You need to see that it is a permanent position, that it's career or career conditional. The other thing that you want to look on the vacancy announcement is for specialized experience. Most people don't realize that the vacancy announcement is an excellent map to help you compete for the position. Number one is what you will see is that they will give a summation of the duties. So you can figure out, do I have the experience that would make me a good candidate for this particular job. Then what they also give you is examples of specialized experience. So you can quite honestly figure out, do I match the requirements for this particular job? Would I be a good fit for this job? And then on top of it, if you don't have the experience, keep looking in the vacancy announcement to see if there is a substitution of education for experience. And if there is, what you probably want to do is make sure that you have tons of copies of your college transcripts, not official copies, because we know they're expensive and we don't want to get them, separated from the application. But some agencies still accept through snail mail copies of transcripts, and in which case it usually is that, just copies, not official copies where you have to pay $15 a pop. But not only that, what you have to do is look at the deadline for the submission of the documents. If the documents need to be submitted by the closing date and will only be accepted by the closing date, if you haven't asked them of your school yet, it may well be that they will not make the deadline and therefore you will not be considered for the job. Okay. The other thing you want to include on your application is you want to see if there are any positive education requirements, or as we said before, if you're substituting education in lieu of experience. You want to see if there are certificates that you need. If the position says, for example, wage and hour assistance, Spanish/English, what that usually means is that you need a bilingual ability in Spanish and English. So therefore, if you speak only English, what you want to understand is you're probably setting yourself to get a not qualified letter, because is it that the position requires the bilingual ability? And it will all say that in the vacancy announcement. Regardless of what language you speak, whether it's Spanish, Russian, German, Portuguese, make sure that you highlight if you have a bilingual ability. That is, you can read, write, speak the language. Typing speed. If you are interested in positions that have the title Office Automation in it, or secretary, there is usually going to be a typing speed of 40 words per minute. Now, with them going to radio buttons, in other words, all I have to do is check, I type 40 words per minute or greater, what you have to remember is what is being matched against that is your resume. So if the HR specialist looks at your resume and sees that you put down, I type 37 to 40 words per minute, well, they have to average it out, and what they come out is less than 40 words per minute. So even though you checked, I typed 40 words per minute or greater, the fact that your resume said that you typed less than 40 words per minute, we've got to go according to what is on your resume. Now, driver's license. You will see that some positions require driver's license. And I know very many of you will say, well, Dolores, I'll get the driver's license before the announcement closes, and then this way I'll be qualified for the job. But what you want to remember, and what I always point out to applicants that call me, is that you want to make sure that that you set yourself up for success, so that, for example, you're going to be learning a lot of technical material, you're going to be meeting new people. That is going to be a stress unto itself. And on top of it, if a driver's license is required, that means you're going to have to drive probably in urban traffic during rush hour. And is that something you really want to place on yourself? The other thing you need to look at is a job might be perfect for you, but you want to travel and it has absolutely no travel. Or maybe you need to be home with your family every night, or you have an obligation every night and you don't want to travel. So look and see if the travel is required in the job. Now, I know a lot of you have watched American Idol, or So You Think You Can Dance, or America's Got Talent, or Dancing with the Stars. I know that, so you don't have to tell me. But one of the things I want you to think about is whenever you watch any one of those talent programs, I don't know about you, but I, you know, usually get some sort of candidate and I'm really going, yeah, they're doing so great. And then they do something dumb. You know, they miss an easy step because they were trying to make it super high, or they tried to make a note and they cracked and it sounded awful. Well, sometimes when I'm looking at applications, I'm going through that same process. Someone submits a fabulous cover letter. It says everything that they have ever done in the job. And then I look at their resume, and it's schematic, it's bullet points. As I said before, you've got to remember a private sector resume is different than a federal resume. Okay, so one of the big things you have to remember is if you know you have a great cover letter, well, in the federal sector, that cover letter will not be used to help you meet the requirements for the job. Okay? In the private sector, what do they tell you to do in all of the classes? To use buzzwords, to make it short. And in the private sector, what else can you do? Well, you can schmooze your way into an interview, right? What winds up happening is that you make friends with the secretary, and next thing you know, your kids are in Girl Scouts together, and and you get an appointment. Well, in the federal sector, that's not possible because some of you, what has happened in the past is you will call me up and say, oh, Dolores, did you receive my application? And I would say yes. And they would say, well, I just want to talk to you about my background. And at that point, I have to say it is inappropriate because what I do for one person, I have to do for 1,000 people if I'm the person that is rating and ranking. So one of the things that you have to do in a federal resume is to prove that you possess the specialized experience. And what does that mean? That means showing details. It means showing the depth, scope, and complexity of what you do. It also means showing whether you have part-time or full-time.
Dolores?
Yes.
This is actually Steve. Just wanted to double check. I'm getting some messages from people that the sound still isn't coming through the webinar. Did you launch the program with the sound to unmute when, like, we had been talking before the program started?
Let me launch it again. Okay.
Okay. I apologize for the interruption.
No, not at all.
Just a few people have been sending me messages.
Hey, can everybody hear me now?
I guess just keep on going. I just wanted to see if maybe you could try to relaunch it again so that way then hopefully the sound will be coming through on the webinar.
If people can't hear, then maybe they should raise their hand so that you have some indication.
I apologize. If you've gone ahead and relaunched it, I would say continue on with your presentation, Dolores. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Again, let Steve or Barbara know if you can't hear me. I'm sorry. In the private sector, I'll start again from the top of the page. What we do is we make it short, it's schematic, there are buzzwords. In the federal sector, you need to prove that you possess the specialized experience. So usually what you want to do is, number one, look at the vacancy announcement and see what the full-time experience is. Is it 6 months? Is it 1 year? Is it 3 years? So that whenever, remember, we're audited. We're audited on how we rate applications. So one of the things we have to make sure that we do is ensure that indeed you have the number of years, months of experience that is required on the vacancy announcement. So one of the good practices to do is, for example, put down January 1st, 2008 to January 2010 full-time. Wherever you've worked part-time, you should look at the entire year and then average it out. Because some of you, especially if you're working and you're going to school, some of you while you're in school might only be working 10, 20 hours a week or maybe even less. And then when you leave, when you are on vacation, what you're doing is you're working full-time, go back to school, you're working part-time. So average it out. And most importantly, remember, nothing can be inferred. I have this thing that I go through in my head, which is a secretary is not a secretary is not a secretary. All of you have probably worked at jobs where someone right next to you had the same title as you did. But whether it was because of fluke or whether just because you had learned something earlier, sometimes what winds up happening is even though you have the same title as someone else, you wind up being an expert, for example, on dealing with conflict resolution. In other words, you're the person whereby if somebody started yelling or screaming, what would happen is everybody in the staff knew to throw that person to you because you knew how to either calm the person down or how to speak to them. And on top of it, eventually, probably what happened is you learned how to deal with the supervisor so that the supervisor was able to help the person that needed that was complaining, and maybe even with corporate headquarters. So there are certain advantages that one has when certain things are thrown your way, because what happens is you become an expert in it, or you learn more than the other folks. So what you have to do is really take a look at what you've done and articulate it. For example, very many times people will say, I have administrative experience. I have no idea what that means, because that is going to vary from position to position. Okay? Now, so nothing, even if I knew you, even if you carpooled with me, nothing can ever be inferred. So demonstrate you have the experience so that you can be found qualified. Now, I told you what's happened is that competency questions have been thrown out the window. There are no longer narratives, or if some agencies still have them, they're in the process of getting rid of them. But one of the things you should remember is that if you answer those 15, 20, 30, 40 competency questions, they're not even going to be looked at unless you are found qualified. All right? So the first thing the HR specialist does is look to see if you are qualified for the position, if you meet the minimum qualifications. If you do not, then you're going to be found not qualified. The second step is to look at the competency questions. Now, if you look at the competency questions, basically, most folks can figure out what the best answer is, okay? Each one of those questions has been assigned points. So, for example, question one might have only a 2-point at the highest answer, but question two might have 30 points. Now, what you need to remember is however you answer those competency questions, it needs to be reflected in your resume, because the two of them are going to be matched up. So let us say the position is a risk analyst position, and you've answered all of these questions on risk analysis, 40 of them, and you were found minimally qualified. So now we're looking at all of your answers, and I go to your resume, and I don't find anything whatsoever on risk analysis. That means every point for every one of those questions is going to be taken away. So it's very important to remember is, number one, prove that you meet the specialized experience, minimum qualifications. Number two, however you answer in the competency questions, that you make reference to it, not in your cover letter, but in your resume, so that we can know whether did they do that for 3 months, for 6 months, a year, so that anyone looking at that application, at that resume, can show that this applicant proved that they met the qualifications and deserve the point value that they got. All right. So we've already gone through this. No more competency questions, right? Give an explanation of what your job entails. Make it very clear for whoever is reading the application. And most importantly, be very wary of acronyms. I worked for KMG in the XDX department, where I was head of and managed the ZMD position under the $5 million Act of JKA. I have no idea what that means. People in your industry might know what it means, but I would not have any idea whatsoever. So be wary of acronyms. If you want to use that example, then explain exactly what it means. Something in regards to clerical positions. I have experience filing materials in numerical order. This was approximately 80% of my work. Now I have an idea that this person just didn't do it occasionally, you know, getting rid of the day's mail, but rather 80%, this person knows how to archive files. Okay, and if it's alphanumerical and if it's under some sort of particular system, then you should make that very clear, because all of a sudden now we're talking about a very technical ability. How much experience is required? Well, full-time is considered 35 to 40 hours per week. And again, what we want you to look at is the vacancy announcement to see, do you need 1 year of full-time experience, 3 years of full-time experience? And again, you have to write it out so that the rater, whoever is looking at the application, can add up to see that you meet the required time. Because if they can't do it, what you're going to do is have an incomplete application because the rater could not figure out how much time you had if you met the requirement, okay? And as I said before, we're audited, so anyone reading the application should be able to deduce that the employee meets the required amount of experience. Now, very oftentimes what would happen is I would advertise for an investigator labor. Now, the investigator position requires investigative experience. But I always knew that hundreds of people did not read the vacancy announcement, because if they would have read the vacancy announcement, they would have seen that the type of investigative experience that was required was financial. So therefore, I would be getting all of these resumes that had on it homicides, that they were street cops, that they did occasionally, there would be embezzlements. But then what you have to figure out, if you're looking for a year's experience, was it simply, 10% of their work for a year, and then in which case they wouldn't meet the qualifications. But in some cases, there were some officers that were actually assigned to task force for a couple of years or for a year. And what would happen is, yes, based on how they wrote their resume, they were able to prove that they indeed have that financial investigation background. And then once you look at the background, you want to see, were they part of a team? Did they lead the investigation? Were they responsible for monitoring other people's work, or was it just a special three-month project? Again, all of this trying to figure out what the depth, scope, and complexity of their job was. So again, depth, scope, complexity. Now, think American Idol, right? So you're already championing a person. You already have a favorite. And what you want to do is you want to look at now how all of this stuff, it comes out to play. The old way, before 11-1-2010, for every position that was announced on the outside, what happened is they could only choose from the top three candidates. Well, now we've gone to category rating, and let me show you what category rating looks like. Number one, it preserves those veterans who have veterans' preference. It preserves their rights. However, now what happens is applicants are going to be put into categories. Category A, which is the best qualified, which could be 90 to 100. That's the score. Category B could be well qualified, which is 80 to 90, and category C, which is qualified 70 to 80%. So what I want to do is I want to make sure that this here is exactly the category that I get into. So if I want to do that, remember, first I've got to meet the specialized experience. Second, I've got to prove that all my answers that I answered on those quick little radio buttons are in here, and hopefully I'll wind up in this category. And if there are less than three people in this category, then these two categories can be combined. But if there are any veterans in this category, those veterans will go on top even of the A category. Okay? So, and compensable veterans, disabled veterans, what happens is if they are found qualified, period, they go to the very top of Category A. Now, so what do you need to do? Well, what you need to do is you need to prepare your resume. If you haven't opened a job in USA, if you haven't opened an account yet in USA Jobs, you need to go out there. And you can have as many as five resumes out there. So what you can also do is once you go out to USA Jobs, you should look under My Account, and we will look there. And what you'll see is that there is something that is called Saved Searches. Now, for the longest time, I didn't go into saved searches because I figured, gee, I haven't saved any searches, so why do I need to go in there? But if I would have looked in there from the very beginning, what I would have found is the ability to create almost like an agent for myself. What I could do is I could say, for example, wage and hour investigator, or I could put the series number down, which I know is 1849, and I could put NYC. So that means any job that came up with the series number of 1849 and NYC would automatically be emailed to me. Now, you have to be careful because just like in Google, you put down the wrong thing, and if I just put down, for example, 1849, that would give me every grade level and all over if I wanted to work in New York, it would give me all over the United States. Okay? So what you want to do is you want to be very careful about how you build your search agents, but you'll be able to tweak them. And of course, what you want to do is you want to apply today. Now, where you would find that saved searches is under My Account. Now, what we want to do is we want to look at an example here. So, for example, I put in that I'm interested in Chicago, Illinois, the metro area, and then on top of it, I put down that I'm interested in social welfare. Well, the next thing that is going to happen is that it will give me all of the jobs, and you can see, for example, this person even added that they wanted a grade of GS-14. Now, remember where I told you that most people only check this radio button, which is only jobs open to all U.S. citizens. Well, what I want to be very careful of is if I now know I'm eligible under Schedule A, in other words, jobs open to current and former federal permanent employees with reinstatement eligibilities, and on top of it, those eligible under special hiring authorities, then I want to go to all jobs. All right? Now, so for example, if you look at the gray box here, you'll be able to see economist. Now, you can see a little bit about what the economist does. It says who may apply, the public, the pay plan, in which case this is what? We now know that this is a GS-5-7, so out of 5 in New York, for example, a GS-5 would start at $35,309 in the year 2011, and a GS-7 would start at $43,738, that is in New York. So I don't care that New York makes more than Chicago, so I am going to want to take this job and I'm going to click on it, and not only is it a 5-7, but on top of it's full time, and this job closed 9/29/2006. Okay, so that's something that you want to take a look at. So there we go. And look at this. It is a job that starts at a 5 or a 7, but has promotion potential to a GS-12. And remember, we had talked about the differences in those salaries before. So if I am eligible for a GS-5, perhaps, let's say, based on education, and I'm eligible for a GS-7, what I might want to do is the following. I might want to apply for both because I know that in a year I will go from a 5 to a 7, so maybe it might be worth it for me to apply for that job. Because when they rate and rank me, I am going to be at different spots, possibly, on each level. They will rank me for the 7, and in which case maybe I'll be in Category B. They will rank me for the 5, and in which case I'll be for Category A. And if there are a lot of applicants in Category A for both 5 and 7, that really means I only have a shot at the 5. Now, sometimes what people do is when they learn that, oh, they only applied for the 7, they were eligible for the 5, but they put down they only wanted the 7, they'll say, well, can you consider me for the 5? And remember, every vacancy announcement basically says you need to have everything done by a specific date. So usually it's the closing date, and they say that, no, you are not eligible to be considered for the GS-5. So basically what you did was you lost your chance to apply for that 5. So there are a couple of decisions that you have to make when applying for a job. Now, we know that the job that we looked at before was in Chicago, but look at this. It says multiple duty stations, which is maybe if they had one in New York, maybe that's one that you might want to apply for as well. But we can see this particular pool is open only to U.S. citizens. So that means it's going to be a large swimming pool. But you should also make sure that you submit if you're eligible for the Schedule A letter, meaning that you have that certification of disability plus the statement of job readiness. Now, that's the overview. You can see that there are duties, there are qualifications, there's benefit information, and how to apply. And again, everything you need to know is required that it be on the vacancy announcement. Now, once you've applied for a job, what you want to do is you want to know what the status is. And in which case, if you look at the third row, what you'll see is application status. And you'll be able to click on that and see whether you're whether it's been reviewed, whether it's in the process of being reviewed, whether it's been qualified, minimally qualified, best qualified, and referred to the selecting official, incomplete, whatever the status is, it will be placed out there. However, remember, in the U.S. Department of Labor, there are people that are rating and ranking these applications. So in which case, is it going to happen the next day? Sometimes it does happen the day after the position closes, but it always depends upon what work is on the specialist table. Now, what you've also got to do is build a federal resume online. So what you need to do the first time you do this, that you apply for a job, you need to allow yourself at least 3 hours because you're going to have to build an account on USA Jobs. Then you're going to have to fill out the job-specific questions. There's a lot of work to be done. And if you decide to put in for a job, 15 minutes before midnight of the closing date, I'm going to tell you that a lot of people often have problems because there are so many people trying to do the same thing that the system keeps going up and down, and sometimes your work is saved and sometimes it isn't, and it just winds up being a very frustrating process. Give yourself time to put in information. And remember, you have until 5 minutes to midnight of the closing date to keep updating your resume, to keep updating your information. Okay? So, federal resumes, as you probably saw, require some items that usually you don't see in a private sector resume. And that includes citizenship, and includes veterans' preference. It includes information on former federal jobs that you might have had, and there are reasons for this. Some of it has to do with giving you points. Some of it has to do with pay. All right? So the thing is, what you want to do is you want to make sure that all of that information is complete. We've already talked about how you need to annotate the dates of employment, such as January 91 to September 2005. Was it full-time or part-time? Provide sense of scope and depth and complexity of the job duties that you had. And remember to include your typing speed or whatever is required on the vacancy announcement in your resume. Use action words: manage, assisted, responded, tested, develop. And remember, in a federal resume only, you can go up to 5 pages if you want. Don't fill it with fluff, but fill it with the information that is necessary to be found qualified for the job. Okay? And as I keep repeating over and over, prove that you meet the minimum qualifications for the job. Prove that the answers you gave on the competency questions can be supported by your resume. Now, sometimes people will call me up and say, Dolores, you didn't find me qualified. What recourse do I have? Well, you know what? What you can do is you can write the HR specialist and say, I would like a reconsideration. And what that means is that you can have another specialist look at your resume, and a specialist on their own will determine whether you meet the qualifications or not. And so, for example, let's say Jack in the next cubicle, he's reviewed your application and comes up with the same determination of not qualified. Well, then you can always ask why, and a written statement will be sent to you. Okay? But, again, you have the right to ask for a reconsideration. If you know that you don't meet the requirements, don't remember that every time you ask a question, you're taking away from a certificate being issued. You're taking away from someone finding out whether they're qualified or not. But you do have certain recourse, and I just want you to remind you of that. Okay? So, if you're interested in applying for a federal job, you can go to dol.gov/jobs or USA Jobs, and or you can find DOL jobs on USA Jobs. You can get from DOL jobs to USA Jobs, so, or you can just go straight into USA Jobs. Whatever you want. Now, one of the big things I want to remind you about is that every vacancy announcement has a contact person, so that if you have a question, and by that I mean a valid question, not that you want someone to read the vacancy announcement to you, but rather have a question, you've gotten confused, you're not sure, the HR specialist cannot tell you whether you should put in for this job or not. That is not fair to you. That is not fair to them, because in order to make an assessment, you need to look at a person's entire work history. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that that any questions you have are really because you are confused on certain items, et cetera. Okay, but again, you can either email them, call them, and they should get back to you with your particular answer. Okay, so we've already talked about usajobs.gov. In the United States Department of Labor, in order to be considered for a job, very many times, unless we go through VESID or Voc Rehab, very many times there is going to be a job vacancy announcement. However, I do want to tell you that there were a whole bunch of times whereby this year in various states we went to Voc Rehab specialists to try and get positions filled through Schedule A, whereby there was a flyer that showed the criteria necessary for the job and the specialized experience, et cetera. And if the person was found qualified, then their application was submitted to the selecting official, at which time the selecting official made a determination as to whether they wanted to interview the applicant or not. I want to go back to American Idol, okay? You have one shot with your resume to razzle-dazzle them. What you've always got to ask yourself, this resume that I've submitted, would I be happy if someone made a determination to interview me or not? Is it that thorough? Is it that detailed? Because that's what happens. Even if you are submitted to a selecting official, they do not have to interview you, okay? They do not have to interview you if you are submitted with those folks who have reinstatement eligibility, permanent former federal employees. They do not have to interview you. And even in the positions open to the outside, they don't have to interview you. Okay, your resume can be submitted to the selecting official because you were part of the best qualified group. But then comes that next step. Did you bring enough to the table to show what an asset you are for this particular position? Okay, so that becomes very important. So here's the way it goes through USA Jobs for DOL.gov. Bottom line is you've got the overview, you've got five resumes that you can choose from, and then you've got different attachments that you can add, such as transcripts and other, which might, for example, be a statement of disability, Schedule A. And then if sometimes the job readiness statement is a different statement, or sometimes it's added with the statement of disability, but either way you can submit each piece. And then of course if you've got a DD-214 and a veteran's letter stating statement of disability, percentage of disability, you could add it there. All right, and then we go to answer the vacancy questions. Do you have a valid driver's license? And I put down no, but if the position requires a valid driver's license, then I know basically that I am not qualified for the job. And if you look at number five, this is how it will look. It will tell you whether it's been uploaded or not and what is out there for you. Or how you can upload it and get it into your application. Now, you can also see when you made your initial application. You can see, for example, when I made the initial application 3/15/2010. I last updated it 3/15/2010. And then application status, you should check on the more information because that's how I learned when I had been submitted for to the selecting official for my current position. Now, public jobs, remember, just to recap, open to U.S. citizens, anyone can complete. Jobs, public, and status, and that's if you are eligible under Schedule A. if you're eligible under VEOA, the Veterans Employment Opportunity Act, if you're 30% or more compensable veteran, if you're a person with with disabilities, in other words, have a Schedule A letter, if you're a former or a present Peace Corps or VISTA volunteer or personnel. Okay, so read the vacancy announcement. It's going to tell you everything you want to know. It will tell you if you can substitute education for experience, the special abilities, if anything, that are requirements. And as I said before, a contact person will be on the vacancy announcement. Now, once you have learned the status of your application, and let us say it has been sent to the selecting official, what will happen is that the selecting official has approximately 90 days to make a decision. So don't get nervous, don't get antsy. But also remember, just because you were referred to the selecting official doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to get an interview. Okay? Then they suggest they make a selection. We send out the final, what the final role of the announcement is, whether you've been found qualified or not qualified. And what we want to remind you is that certain jobs require security clearances. Now, one of the things that you have to do is that you've got to go searching for being hired. You have to research potential opportunities, consider various employment avenues, search on job websites for specific agencies, because as I said before, specific agencies will not be advertised on USA Jobs. And follow all the application directions. And remember, Schedule A is a non-competitive hiring authority for people with intellectual challenges, physical disabilities, and psychiatric disabilities. The documentation can come from a licensed medical professional or a state or private voc rehab specialist or any government agency that issues or provides disability benefits and a statement of job certification, which we already talked about. So you've got to learn how to talk the language, which is inside or outside. How many ways can you compete? If you've got a Schedule A letter, that means you can compete inside and outside. So why not do them all? Okay? And what will happen is that you may indeed wind up being a federal employee. So non-competitive, if you've got the paperwork, that Schedule A letter, and you know of a job that's open, you can submit your resume, et cetera, and you're hired. And that is good for, as I said before, preference eligibles, these are which are some, compensable veterans, and Schedule A. So the other thing that I want you to be very wary or aware of is the OF-306. The OF-306 is a declaration of employment. Now, question 9 asks the following. During the last 10 years, have you been convicted, been in prison, been on probation, or been on parole? And if yes, then you have to give an explanation, and you've got to give a place, and you've got to give the name of an address of the police department or court involved. And question number 2, it asks you, have you ever been fired from a job or resigned from a job because you thought you were going to be fired? Whatever you do, be honest. It always comes out, always, always, always. And if you lie, you've got to remember who you are applying to. You are applying for a job not only with the United States government, but you are applying for a job that is an enforcement compliance agency, which means we enforce laws. So you can imagine, here you were fired. Maybe it was just because of conflict of personality. You lied about it. You're in a job of an investigator. Now they have the right, if they find this out, to fire you right on the spot because you lied on the OF-306. What you've got to remember is managers are human. They understand that sometimes, yes, there was a conflict of personality. Yes, you weren't a good fit for that job. Just be honest and between your education and or your experience, you still might be the perfect fit for the job. And if you're not, well, it may well be that you weren't a perfect fit for the job. So just remember, be honest. Now, we're going to end the show, and we're going to take a look real quick at we're going to take a real quick at a real vacancy announcement. So now we are going out to USA Jobs. And what I had told you before, is up here, you can see applicants and you can see my information, my account, basically, and the bottom line is that's where you would look for search agents. That's where you could do search agents. Okay. So, okay, so that's what you want to do, and let me, I'm having a little problem here with sharing the screen with USA Jobs. Okay, and I'm going to go to Browse Jobs. Okay, it seems that I'm having problems with going to USA Jobs. What I'd like to do at this particular point, because it's 8 o'clock anyway, what I'd like to do is take questions now. Does anybody have any questions?
Okay, Ms. Garcia?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give them the instructions. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if there is any questions you have, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if there is any questions, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Our first question comes from Catherine. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yes. Thank you for the nice presentation tonight, by the way. It was very good. I really got a lot from it. One time I was a temporary civil service worker when my children were young.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, I'm working for government kind of contracted medical company. However, it isn't civil service. That's something I wish to maybe look back into again, and I am currently not deemed as disabled, but I do have a couple autoimmune diseases that have worsened over the years that it is possible that I may be in that predicament in the future. Is this only something this website and what we went over tonight, again, if I understood you, for anyone that is disabled or...
No, not at all. I kept talking about swimming pools, the big swimming pool and the small swimming pool, right? Well, the bottom line is you, because you are part of the public, you can apply for these jobs as well. You won't have the certification to get into the smaller pool, but you are eligible to apply for all of these jobs, as anyone is, and in which case you would be eligible under public, jobs open to public only. Was that the end of the question? Hello?
Yeah. If they deem me as disabled, that form that you were talking about?
Yes.
I had a pen right then, and I didn't, and I apologize. I didn't get to write that form down that you were talking about.
Actually, it's a letter that is on the OPM website. You guys are going to have access to this presentation, and so therefore you'll be able to see it right then and there. Or if not, what you can do is send me an email, and I will send you a copy of what the letter should look like. Anybody who deals with voc rehab should know what the letter looks like in your particular state.
Okay. Do you have an email address that you've already sent us, or can I get that from you?
It's Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A, dot Dolores, D-O-L-O-R-E-S, at D-O-L dot G-O-V.
Okay, and that was D like David, O like Oscar, L?
Yes.
And then dot gov.
Right, G-O-V, as in government.
That all lowercase? Okay. Garcia.Dolores at dol.gov.
Yes.
And you could just send us what the letter A would look like. And
for the display, yes.
Okay. And that is a letter.
And if I could just actually kind of interrupt so we can take our next question. We did actually send a sample Schedule A letter with the confirmation materials. So if you did not get that with Dolores' slide, you can also check with your local chapter because I did scan a sample Schedule A letter from our local vocational rehabilitation agency as well.
I got an email confirmation, and I did print some papers, so if it's
okay.
In there.
Okay, yeah, so if you could just check that, and so that way then we can go on to the next question, please, ma'am. If you have any further questions, please check back with your local chapter or Dolores directly, okay?
All right,
we just want to make
thank
sure that there's
Dolores.
Plenty of time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Sonia. Go ahead, Sonia.
Thank you. Hello, Dolores. I just had a quick question for you. I also am not deemed disabled, but I do have MS. I had actually looked at applying for a job through OPM. However, the job description required lifting, standing, walking for approximately 90% of the day, which I'm not able to do. So I did not apply for that job. I don't know if you had any advice on how I, you know, if I should have handled that differently. I didn't feel it was right that I would apply for that job and then not be able to really do those tasks.
Thank you. One of the things that we're looking at is people being hired because the bottom line is, can you do the job? And you were very articulate in stating that you didn't think you'd be able to do the job. But the thing is, what I want you to look at is there are a lot of titles out there where you might be able to do the job and you just don't know what the title is. So, for example, let's say you do office automation work. I would go out to my city, you know, whatever area it is that you want to work at, and see what the job titles all look like. Because, dollars to donuts, there may be other federal agencies in the same area, so what agencies are out there that I can tap into, but not only that, what series can I tap into? So, for example, if I think office automation, I think 0301. Now, it can be a title, a whole bunch of different titles can come up with 0301. They're basically in the same family, but they're not the same job. So I guess one of the things that I can offer you is try to figure out what title, what series interests you, and then maybe you'll be able to get a variation of that series that will accommodate your particular needs. Okay, remember, this administration is very much getting into telework. Some agencies can't have telework, obviously, because of the nature of the work that they do. But this is all things that we're seeing changing in the federal sector. So I hope that answers your question. Did it?
We've kind of muted lines after each question, so I think...
Yeah, tell her you can just send me an email if you have any additional questions on series, okay?
Dolores, did anyone raise their hand on the web? Is it possible for us to get questions from people on the web as well?
You know what? I don't see any questions. Wait. Sorry, did the wrong thing. Yes, I have questions.
Okay, maybe we can shift back and forth between the phone and the web so
sure.
We get the chance.
Okay, sorry, Kathy, the sound was echoing. Okay, apparently from Rob, how do you find out about jobs? The way you find out about them is by going to USA Jobs. And sorry, regarding the technical stuff, believe it, we did it before. The organization that I'm currently working with is the United States Department of Labor. Lisa, are KSAs required for all positions? Hopefully you note that only certain, all agencies should be going to competency-based questions, which are multiple choice, et cetera. So no, the KSAs really aren't required now at the first stage for all positions. Do you want to go back to a phone question?
Sure, let's do one and one.
Okay.
Alma?
Yes, ma'am. Our next question comes from Alicia. Go ahead, Alicia.
Thank you. I know President Obama has said that the federal government's going to be freezing salaries for 2 years, and they've talked about cutbacks and so forth. If you go through all these steps to try to get a federal job, what changes it, if you do get in, that you will get a freeze? I know you said with the different steps up through 12 that you can automatically go up, but if he's putting a freeze in there, does that still apply?
I can only talk to you about the United States Department of Labor. So, for example, you can still get a within-grade increase. So if I'm a GS-5 and I don't have promotion potential to a 6, I can go to a 5-1 a year later. Merit promotions were not being affected either. In other words, if I get into a job at a GS-5 whereby I have promotion potential to a GS-12, they were not being affected either. What they're talking about is basically the salaries, but what they're talking about is that every year, for the most part, excepting I think in the 80s sometime, we get a cost of living adjustment. That's what they mean by freezing the salaries, so that there will be no cost of living adjustments. That is my understanding of what is happening. In terms of jobs, there are always going to be mission-critical jobs that need to be filled. The Department of Labor has certain mandates that they have to fill, and in order to do that, they need to have mission-critical jobs filled. It may be that for every 3 jobs, maybe they'll only fill 1 or 2. That vacate, but the bottom line is there's going to be some recruitment going on, but we don't know how much yet. Next question.
Our next question comes from Sandy. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I have a question. Because of the technical difficulties at the beginning, I lost the audio for maybe the first half of the presentation. Is there some way to access the whole thing when we're finished with this?
Yes. My understanding is your chapters are going to get canned version of this presentation, so you'll be able to listen to it again.
And this is Steve. Sandy, we should also be able to, from the teleconference company, get a MP3 file. So we can also, we'll be sending that link to your local chapter, so you can contact your local chapter, and they should be able to send the link out to you, and you can download the audio that way as well. Dolores, was there another question that might have come in through the webinar?
Yeah, some of these...
If there's maybe like a common theme a few people who have posed a similar question.
One of the questions I got was, I attended this webinar with my brother in mind. He is physically disabled. He has some college completed and various work experiences, but hasn't worked in the past 5 years, and the jobs he has worked were part-time. The bottom line is, I guess you're trying to ask me, he's capable of using a computer and working. And is very bright. Was accepted from a top 20 university out of high school. His only limitation is a result of being diagnosed with MS at the age of 18. Do you think it'd be possible for him to find a job? Yes, definitely. The bottom line is, if he got into one of the top 20 universities, the bottom line is obviously he's bright, very bright, and there are jobs that the trick is for anyone to find a right job that is good for them, but I'm assuming he'd be able to look at regulations, you know, read, write, even communicate written-wise and orally. And so, yes, I think there is definitely the possibility of a job. It's just finding the right job, the right place. And I'm assuming what he would need also is, I don't even know that. I was going to say working from home, but that might not even be a problem for him. I don't know. But definitely he has a shot at a job, sure, sure. Next question, please. On the phone.
Our next question comes from Arlene. Go ahead, Arlene.
My question was the same on the disability statement. The statement of disability, it sounded to me like this was some kind of form an individual should have, a Schedule A. Is this something a person with a disability is supposed to have from their doctor?
It can be from their doctor. It can be from Voc Rehab, VESID. It can come from several places. Hopefully what you'll do is you'll get a copy of this presentation, because if you notice the last slides, it showed you who you could get the Schedule A from. And it's not a form, but rather it's a form-like letter.
And this is Barbara. As Steve mentioned, we did send out a sample Schedule A in all the materials that were sent out. If for some reason you did not get the materials, please contact your chapter, and they should be able to send it out to you along with the other materials.
Barbara, just to follow up with that too, your chapter will also be able to give you contact information for your state's vocational rehabilitation agency, who does also have the authority to write you the Schedule A letter.
So if you don't have a Schedule A letter and you want to get one, contact your local chapter, and they can give you the phone number to or contact information for the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency in your particular state.
Okay. Maybe next question from online?
Sure. Chapter, how does the government I receive this via the MS New Jersey chapter. How does the government screen and or not discriminate against MS people? The bottom line is, you know, you keep saying this over and over, which is that who can do the job? It's as simple as that. And then if you look at federal job vacancy announcements, what you'll see is that in certain jobs, actually, you can request an accommodation be made. So, for example, someone was talking to me earlier, they can't be out after dark. And so what you would do is request hours that if you were offered the position, would it be a problem if you not ever be there after dark? So that's how we don't discriminate. It's how can whether you can do the job or not. Next question.
Alma, next question for...
Our next question comes from Cedric. Go ahead, Cedric. Cedric, please go ahead with your question. Your line is live.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you, Cedric. How can I help?
I'm just calling. Somebody answered this earlier, but... I have a really bad case of MS, and I know that somebody else asked this question. I want to be see if I can work from home.
Well, Cedric, there are certain jobs where you can work from home. The thing is that you have to search for them. Very many times what they'll do is they'll say they're telecommuting jobs. So the important thing is to find out what sort of job you would be a good fit for, and then just to apply for it. And hopefully what today's webinar did was help you know how to compete for a job, help you how to apply for a job.
Next question from the web?
Yeah. I work full-time and currently in school. I finished school in November 2011. How would I put that on my resume? Well, number one, you've got to figure out when do you want to work, because if you don't want to work until you reach 2011 in November, then obviously you might want to wait a little while. If you want to use the credits that you have right now, what I would do is I would get copies of all of the transcripts of all of the courses I've completed and say I have completed X amount of credits and will graduate on X date. But remember, if you're being considered for a job based solely on education, you've got to ask yourself, will you have completed that education by the closing date of the announcement?
I think we have time for one more question. It's almost 8:30. So, Alma, do we have anybody else online, on the phone? Sorry.
Yes, ma'am. Our final question comes from Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Garcia and Mr. Neese and everyone for scheduling this presentation. It was great. Some of my questions have been answered because folks have been asking about the Schedule A, and I did get the material online. But my question is more in line. Ms. Garcia, you talked about making sure that your resume is the depth and the scope. And with myself with multiple sclerosis, as with many other folks, I experience cognitive difficulties. And so it makes it a little how can I get some assistance, or do you have any resource to help me with making sure that I'm really doing the depth and the scope within my resume?
The only thing I can suggest you do is I know that a lot of State Department of Labor offices offer some really good workshops. And what I would suggest you might want to do is start saying, hey, I know that you give workshops on resume writing, but now I'm interested in a federal resume. How can you help me? And this way, if they don't know how, then they need to call someone like me so that I can help train them, all right, on how to do this particular type of resume. So hopefully that will help you. Hopefully they have some sort of contacts in the federal sector already that would be able to help them, and hopefully it would filter down. One of the things I want to remind you guys is that sometime tomorrow I will be sending you all a survey to fill out. If you could please fill it out, it will help us improve the program for the next group of folks. I want to thank you all very much for joining us. It is the witching hour of 8:30, so thank you and have a good night.
Thank you, Dolores. It was a great presentation. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak to our members this evening. And if people have questions that weren't answered, you know that you can reach out to Dolores at her contact information. If you have additional questions, you can email your chapter or Steve Nissen or myself at the National Capital Chapter or the New York City Southern New York Chapter. Again, thank you again for listening in this evening, and we hope that you found the presentation informative. Good evening, everyone.